This is Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Bonnie North. Mitch Tyke is on vacation. For the past 6 months, we've been bringing you a weekly series called Precious Lives. It's created by Milwaukee's 371 Productions, and it's a two-year series about gun violence and young people in the Milwaukee area. The series has other partners as well, including WNOV and the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Ashley Lutheran is a public safety reporter at the paper, and she wrote the July 18th article on the successful efforts of Minneapolis to reduce youth violence there and how those efforts compare to Milwaukee's. Emily Foreman is senior producer of Precious Lives for 371 Productions, and she spent a week in Minneapolis talking with both people affected by youth violence and to those working to reduce its occurrence. They both join me in the studio now to talk about what Milwaukee policymakers and communities can learn from Minneapolis's successes. Ashley and Emily, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
So, Ashley, let's begin with you and the reporting that you did for the Journal Sentinel. What has Minneapolis done in terms of youth violence prevention that Milwaukee is looking to maybe take some lessons from?
What Minneapolis has done is create a comprehensive citywide plan that essentially brings government agencies, law enforcement, nonprofits, businesses all together to really look at how you prevent youth violence. And they frame it by very broad goals, but having those goals, according to folks in Minneapolis, is what really helps drive the work that they do. Everything that they are doing is in furtherance of these goals, trying to reach these goals.
Were those goals determined by any one particular group, or was that a consensus?
It was absolutely a consensus. It was an effort spearheaded by the mayor at the time, R.T. Ryback, a very personal initiative for him. And he really talked a lot to both me and Emily about how he had to humble himself a little bit and go out into meetings that were not necessarily friendly for him. There's this idea that violence is intractable, but we sort of intuitively know there are certain things that could help protect kids from becoming victims of violence. Having a trusted adult in their life, having a safe space to be, whether it's school or their neighborhood park, and, you know, continuing to build those relationships. And so Minneapolis took those broad goals, figured out which ones were the most important to them based off of community consensus, laid them out and said, we're going to measure certain things, whether it be youth victims of assault, youth victims of gunshot injuries, youth homicide victims, and we're going to measure these things. And we're going to try to make sure that all of our efforts are aligning with those goals and that we're actually seeing progress.
One of the things I thought was interesting is that they are treating it as a public health issue, that that's the broad overall umbrella, and that by doing that, that seems to open up some other ways of approaching it. Is that fair?
That's absolutely fair. And I think that's something that in Milwaukee we have talked about for a very long time. I don't think the concept of treating violence as a public health issue is unfamiliar to really any of the decision makers in Milwaukee. They've advocated that idea for quite a while.
Mm-hmm. I can chime in with that too, because I was talking to Gretchen Musicant, who is the commissioner of health for Minneapolis, and she was saying that she's never had another public health issue where the community was just begging for her to declare it a public health issue, because it changes the narrative. It makes it more complicated that this is a problem that involves more than just law enforcement and bad people. There are these upstream things and factors involved that contribute to violence. So they actually made a resolution to declare gun violence a public health issue in Minneapolis. And I think that show of commitment from the health department was really an important message for the community in showing that the city cares.
Well, and it also sounds like it shows that the city is focused resources on it, not piecemeal, but as sort of an overall, we're going to take care of this however we bring all of the parties together.
Right. And it really shows, having a plan really shows that this issue is a priority. And, you know, even among different city departments in Minneapolis, they were doing, as you said, piecemeal, different things that could be considered violence prevention. But having this plan and having a space to really bring everyone together is what they've found to be so valuable.
Is there one single person that is in charge of preventing youth violence?
Well, that one person, if I could say anyone, it would be Sasha Cotton. She's kind of like this superwoman. I spent a lot of time with her when I was in Minneapolis. She gave me a tour of the city. She's responsible for making sure that the city is hitting these goals. And the way she does that, she has all these ways of staying incredibly connected with the community on all levels. I was with her when she was meeting with a young man named Soldon Armstrong. He had a history of robbing people at gunpoint. He spent some time in prison. And when he got out, he had a felony on his record and he needed a path. And he found the blueprint through one of their blueprint services. And that really gave him a boost. And she's been meeting with him ever since and kind of relying on him as a consultant. So it's everyone from members of the community that are youth that are directly affected by gun violence in the city to she's sitting in these multi-jurisdictional meetings that includes everyone from police, schools, transit, youth employment services. So she's designed her world so that she has her finger on the pulse of all these different levels of gun violence prevention in the city.
Does she have authority to act? It sounds like she is, but does she have authority from city government or state government to actually be the point of contact for all these, you know, disparate initiatives?
I would say yes. I think because of the people at the table in these multi-jurisdictional meetings, there's the commander of the Minneapolis Police Department. There's someone from the mayor's office. She's embedded in the health department. And funds that come through the health department, she gets say on, and she takes that to the group and says, how should we spend this? So she's the one that kind of presents, I guess, the tools to all these systems level people and more facilitates the conversation.
So, Ashley, I guess the question is, what's happening here in Milwaukee and why haven't we adopted a similar kind of plan since it seems to be working so well at our neighbors?
City officials are aware of Minneapolis's successes. There currently is a plan in development here in Milwaukee that would take a very similar approach. I think something that Milwaukee has struggled with generally is having a lot of disparate groups working on this issue, but just not in a collective way, and that there's a lot of interest in doing that, but it's kind of hard to bring everyone together. You have to think about how you're going to do that. And I think Milwaukee has struggled a little bit at times with that. But I think that people are hopeful with this current plan being in development that they will overcome that and they'll put a plan together that has broad community support, citywide, countywide support, and they could start, you know, developing these goals and putting them into action.
Do you think it needs somebody like this person in Minneapolis to sort of be that facilitator? And if so, who do we think that might be here in Milwaukee?
The plan here in Milwaukee that is in development with the mayor's office, community advocates, and John Richards, who is working through community advocates to kind of marshal ideas about what this plan would look like. And one of the examples he is looking at and that the mayor's office is looking at is Minneapolis. So I imagine it would likely take a similar framework with someone who would be a violence prevention coordinator. The plan hasn't really been released or talked about in a very public forum, so it's not exactly clear if there's one way or another that they're leaning at. And to a certain extent, I don't think the city of Milwaukee has gotten to that level of detail yet with the plan.
Okay.
You know, do we want someone in charge of this? Do we want an executive committee? Do we want monthly meetings, twice monthly meetings? I don't think, from my understanding, that they're at quite that level. They're still gathering community input and trying to get buy-in from the community on this.
One of the things that I noticed in the newspaper article is the list of folks who are working on this. I mean, some amazing nonprofit groups and church groups. And I was thinking that just taking all of those, there must be 40 listed in there. And if we could marshal everybody together, you know, what kind of power that would be to bring to bear on the problem.
Yeah, we've started to do experiment, I guess, with that, with the Precious Lives Project. Our engagement coordinator has been holding these small tables where, Precious Lives has dozens of community partners that you were just mentioning. But our engagement coordinator has reached out to those partners and said, who in this list haven't you met and want to talk to? So he's been having these really interesting groups where it might be three people representing different organizations. coming together and realizing that they are connected in some way and that there are opportunities to work together. So we were talking about Sasha Cotton, who is this convener of all these different groups. And
she's in Minneapolis.
In Minneapolis. Right. I mean, they've been doing that for years now, bringing people to the table together and having conversations and sharing information about how they work. And one thing that she's hoping to do now is give these working groups a little money to actually, you know, do something together, to incentivize even more collaboration. So that's one idea of something that could happen in Milwaukee.
There would be like a pool of money that they could tap into mm-hmm. for some particular project that they'd all work on.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So as we look at this, you know, Minneapolis and Milwaukee are not identical. There are demographic poverty differences, economic differences. How much of what Minneapolis is doing is translatable here? How much can we actually bring in and use, do you think?
I think that's an excellent point. And I think it's important to remember that when Emily and I are reporting these kinds of stories, too, we're not saying this is the only solution or this is the only option or the best necessarily, but we're looking at what seemed to have some success in another area. And yes, Minneapolis and Milwaukee are very different when it comes to poverty rates and demographics. But the idea of having a plan is something that Milwaukee has already done for other issues. We've already done it for infant mortality. We've done it for teen pregnancy. And so given that—
With good success.
With good success. And so given that, I just really think that Milwaukee would be really well, is really well positioned to do something similar to what Minneapolis did. We have great nonprofits. We have great programs. We have great initiatives. But not every nonprofit could be tapped into every initiative. It's just impossible. They don't have the scale or the resources. And maybe some people in neighborhoods who are doing great work, they don't have the access to replicate their efforts citywide or to gain more momentum because there's just a little bit of a gap there. And if we at least had a mechanism to bring them together, I think I would hypothesize that our chances of success would go up.
Do you think we have the political and the community will to do it?
The will is definitely out there. With the Precious Lives series, largely our stories have been focused at grassroots level organizations. Actually, to be fair, I mean, we did a story with the DA. I sat down with Kent Laverne and we talked about this new family justice center that's being built on 6th and Walnut. And that's one demonstration of collaboration between Sojourner, Project Ujima, the police department, the DA, housing resources in one building to tackle the issue of domestic violence in the city. So absolutely, there's a will.
Is it just time now? Do we just need to wait for all of this to come together? Or is there a catalyst that needs to be kind of set off?
If we're not at a tipping point now, I'm not sure when we will be. I think, yes, it's important to look at what's going on crime-wise over a long term. Yes, last year's homicides were fairly low compared to other years. And yes, we're on a record pace like many other cities right now. Maybe not a record pace, but we are certainly higher than we were at this time last year. But I think this is an issue where a lot of people are talking about it. I think a lot of people want to do something more, just something bigger with it. I think there is a real desire to do that. And I think the time is right for Milwaukee to do this. And they are putting something in development. So it seems like city leaders agree.
Ashley Lutheran is a public safety reporter at the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. She wrote the article on Minneapolis's efforts to reduce youth violence in the July 18th edition of the paper. There is a link to it at wuwm.com. Emily Foreman is senior producer of Precious Lies for 371 Productions.